This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon, Joy listeners. It is Sunday Arts Magazine here on Joy 94.9. Brendan and David with you, taking you through till 5 p.m. Welcome, David.
Hello, Brendan.
How are you? Did you miss me?
Last week, not at all.
No, I didn't think so.
No. I hope you had fun. We haven't even had a chance to discuss.
We haven't at all.
Yeah, but we'll do that off air.
We'll get on to that. Yep. Big thank you to Andy for a fabulous Three Calls on the Trip.
And so lovely to have him back on because Katie's filling in for him while he has 3 months off. And, of course, he's heading off on another yachting regatta. Just walk past him. He's not listening to us. I was going to pick on him.
Well, we're very jealous of him. That should be
Not jealous. I'm just happy he's a nice guy.
He is a very nice guy. Now, as you said, you were by yourself last week. Mm-hmm. Danny and I had the week off.
In Sydney
yep. for the Mardi Gras.
Yep.
And the only thing I would add to, you know, discussion about Mardi Gras, obviously it's probably been spoken into the ground.
Yeah, it has.
Do you know what? I would prefer that more arts get involved. It really isn't an art celebration, and I'm sure that's not the point.
It is. There's a lead up. There's 2 weeks lead up.
Okay.
Where it's an arts festival.
Cool me. Okay.
And the thing is that they don't promote it anywhere near as much as they should.
No.
To the outside world, to the people that live in Sydney, it is very much an arts festival for 2 weeks leading up to the big night, the parade and party.
Oh, good.
So there definitely is an arts.
Well, you would know living in Sydney.
Absolutely. But also I have always been aware. And remember a few weeks back we spoke to, a guy that had a play in the arts festival. Yeah. And he wasn't very forthcoming. So, but that's another story for another time.
That is another time. Now, we do have some great guests on.
We do. Very busy show.
Very, very busy show. But one of them is the director from the French Film Festival currently. Mm-hmm. Exhibiting in Melbourne and around the country. So I was lucky enough to actually get a few screeners because I've been very busy today.
Oh, you are a busy boy.
And I've been able to catch up on a few of the films and that are going to be showing and this week and next. And one of the standouts, we'll probably talk a little bit more when Michelle comes in.
Yes.
But
we had a funny story there
to begin with, we might talk about that a little bit later.
But we won't say anything now.
But this one's called All About Them from Jeremy Bonnell, the director. And it's got some queer themes in it.
Oh, and, okay. I think most film festivals do nowadays, don't they?
Well, they do, but I think some film festivals are a little bit more overt, like something like MIFF actually has a queer section.
Of course.
And all of that. But with this one, as far as I know, it's sort of just part of the film festival. Mm-hmm. It's a bit more organic, not so much separated out.
Yeah, sure.
So going into this film, watching this one, I didn't know exactly what was coming. And it is sort of a love triangle, if you will. And it's just played very, very straight, very beautifully, simply told. And it really stuck with me. So out of the three that I've watched, this is probably the standout. Okay. So I might have a chat with Michelle about this.
And what's it called?
It is called All About Them.
Right.
And I'll give it 4 stars.
Wow.
So it's a really strong, and it's, you know, it's such a French film. It's so beautiful, beautifully made and elegant. And, I can't wait to talk to Michelle more about, you know, the film climate in France.
Yeah.
So I sort of want to know what direction it's going in.
Yeah. And it's not just, the French films out of France. It's French speaking countries around the world, isn't it? And he's actually, when he tells us where he's from. You know, there's probably the odd film that comes out of the country that he was born in, which isn't France.
No.
And, of course, the Canadian French as well, which I'm sure they've got a few films in the festival as well.
We're going to pick his brain about all these kind of things. Now, one film that I did get to see last year, and it's finally seeing a release in Australia.
Oh, you're such a mover and shaker, as in you see things. People wait until you see it before they release them.
Of course, of course. Now, this one is called The Witch.
Oh!
Ooh, a bit scary one. And it did show at MIFF last year, so MIFF 2015. And it's one that has done the festival circuit and done very well with audiences. It's got rave reviews all around the world.
Right. Who's in it? Because I've...
No one that you would know. But it's done by, I think he was the first-time director, Robert Eggers. And it's done, as I said, done very well with the critics. And it got released in America, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Mm. And has done fairly well. But, you know, with a low-budget film, you know, it doesn't have to do too well of to course. Make its money back. So overall, I think it's done quite well. And finally, it's getting a release here, but only in select cinemas. I think it's only at Cinema Nova in Melbourne, unfortunately, because it does deserve to be played at more of the cineplexes.
Okay.
Of thing. So if it's showing in your area, it might be in other places as well, I think do hunt it down. If you're looking for a bit more of a smart horror, it's not so much a jumpy, you know, cheap thrill kind of horror. It's very psychological.
Right.
And a little bit of background on it. It is about this young girl who lives with, it's set in the past, in the 1800s, I want to say, and she lives with her very puritanical parents, and they live by the woods, which is never a good start for a horror film, or it's actually the best start for a movie, and, you know, craziness ensues, so I think we should definitely go on to that one if you can. So I'm going to give it 4 stars, bordering on 4.5.
Oh, come on, Brendan. You give everything 4 stars.
Do you know what? MIFF was a bit hit and miss for me last year.
Yeah.
I got to see a number of films, and this one was the one that really did stick with me. So it's and I've thought about it a lot in the past 12 months.
Right.
So I think it deserves its score.
All right, there you go.
I know you're not going to go see it because you hate horror.
Oh, no. Something like that I would, and the way you described it, that it's not that jerky, you know, scaring you for the psychological side of it. I that's the sort of thing I'd see.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You might go see it. I'll force you to go see it, David.
Yeah, sure.
Now, I'm going to play one of my favourite tracks. This is Client Liaison, Feeling, here on Joy 94.9. And then we're going to be joined by Michelle Richard from the French Film Festival here on Joy 94.9. It's Sunday Arts Magazine. Joy. You're on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine. David and Brendan with you. Shout out to Daniel out there.
Yes.
Probably cramming away on an assignment.
Assignments. Although what's going to happen is that all three of us won't be on air from now on. We're going to split it so that there's always just two of us on air. Because, you know, it gives us a chance to have a week off. And if people go on holidays like last week, I did the show by myself.
So. Do you mean a week off from the show or from you, David? I'm not sure.
Well, I'm coming in every week, Brendan, just to keep an eye on, but I'll be quiet some weeks. Imagine how hard that's going to be for me.
It's going to be very hard. Now, one gentleman we've been talking a lot behind the scenes, but we're very excited to chat with him right now, Michelle Richard. We've had a bit of contention about how to pronounce your name. Welcome to Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon.
We're very excited to have you here. You are, you're the director of the Alliance French Film Festival, which has got a long history.
How many years?
27 years. It's the 27th anniversary this year. But I'm not the director of the French Film Festival. Mm. I'm the director of the Alliance Française of Melbourne, who is part in the organization of the festival.
Yeah. Well, it's your festival, isn't it? As in the organization across Australia.
Yes.
The artistic director is out of Sydney.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. It is completely organized by the Alliance Française Network in Australia.
Yes, exactly. Now, you're fairly new to Melbourne.
Yeah.
We always like to hear how people got to where they are now. And you've just arrived in September last year from London.
Yeah, where I was posted at the French embassy as a cultural attaché, and I was dealing with performing arts exchanges between France and the United Kingdom.
Yep, okay, because it's a very big part of what your organisation, isn't it, is the cultural side. Obviously, you can learn to speak French, which there's so many classes and so many people do it, but there's also that whole cultural thing, and of course, the film festival is one of the main things you do on that front. But we also like to find out your whole history. So tell us, because we already know this, but tell us, where were you born?
I was born, in the proximity, I would say, in New Caledonia.
Right, okay, which is very French.
Very French. It's a very French tropical island, very close to Australia. And I left the country to study in France, where I did the most of my career, I would say.
Okay.
Tell us about those differences between, you know, French culture in New Caledonia and then going to the epicenter in Paris.
It's difficult to say, but there's something very Australian in New Caledonia, you know, in the attitude, the mood, something kind of no worries, which is very strong in New Caledonia. At the same time, there's a French twist that makes the difference.
Yeah. And so what did you do when you moved to France?
I studied at La Sorbonne, history, and I had soon the opportunity to work in the field of culture. I started at the National Library, and then went on.
Went on to what?
In the cultural landscape. Sorry, it's very French to say this like that. But I became afterwards a civil servant for the Ministry of Culture, the French Ministry of Culture. And I worked in organizations for the government too, before going abroad for the first time in London 4 years ago.
Right. Oh, and that was your first posting outside of France?
Yeah.
Wow. And now all of a sudden here you are. In Australia, Melbourne, Australia.
I'm very happy to be in Australia, and particularly, I have to say, in Melbourne. I didn't know before, because when I was a kid, I was used to visit Sydney as everybody, and yep. I discovered recently Melbourne, and really, it's my favorite city in Australia.
Well, both of us are from somewhere else. I'm from Adelaide, and Brendan's from the Gold Coast.
Oh, no.
All things, the Gold Coast.
It's a great reference for Caledonian people, you know, the Gold Coast.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, let's talk French films. Now, Brendan has seen some of the films that is part of the film festival, and we did speak about one before you came on air. And so, Brendan, go for it.
Well, I just wanted to clarify, because you don't choose the films, but I guess part of it is being able to sell them, the ones that are chosen, to an audience and say to people, you know, you should go see this.
Exactly.
And one of them I mentioned before is All About Them, and I'm a little bit I'm curious as to how a film like that, I guess, represents the French film landscape in some ways.
For me, it's the most French film of the selection, because it's a comedy and we don't have the same sense of humor. It's very light and very deep at the same time. It's a story of love, as always in French comedies, but a sort of ménage à trois, a bit different than what you would expect, because those young people are very committed to each other. They love each other, and they are just three.
And do you think a film like this with those kind of themes do represent where film is in France at the moment, or is there a lot of experimental productions going on as well?
It's a mix. Mm-hmm. If we're speaking about this particular movie, it's a mix of sheer comedy, I have to say. You have moments incredible. I laughed a lot in All About Them. And at the same time, there's something very French in the way that those young people, those three people, are mentalizing their adventure, I would say.
Mm. Now, Brendan's got a couple of other films there that he has seen, and one in particular, which is the blockbuster film. Which one's that, Brendan?
No, it's called Courted. I'm not sure what the French translation is on that one.
L'Hermine. And you know, L'Hermine is a small beast. White, you know, Hermine, you find them in cold countries,
right,
in the north. And yep, it's the outfit of the judge in French courts.
Ah, very elaborate.
Okay, right.
Very beautiful.
Now you were saying that it's a nice film, but you don't love it. And you can say this.
You can't say this.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
I love this movie.
Not to put words.
Hey, you didn't say you hated it.
No, I said it was not my favorite one.
That's
a surprise hit, if you will, Dave.
Right.
And I would sort of...
A crowd pleaser.
I would kind of say the same thing. I thought it was a very well-made film, but, you know, why this film is breaking through with the audience, though? Why do you think it is?
It's difficult to say, but I would say because of Fabrice Luchini, who is the main character. He's a star in French cinema, and whatever he's doing, it's a hit.
And does the star system, you know, like Hollywood had Tom Cruise in the 80s and 90s, is there that kind of same system in France?
Yes, but you know, less starish, mm-hmm, than in Hollywood, and less professional. But when I say less professional, French actors have a private life. They are very proud of this, mm-hmm, and they don't do anything for their job.
Yep.
It's the difference. Yep. It's why it's difficult for us to attract them in Australia on a trip during the festival.
Okay,
and it would haven't happened in Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
And you say I'm not speaking about Marion Cotillard, but I'm referring, for instance, to Catherine Deneuve. She said, Catherine Deneuve.
Yeah.
She said that working in Hollywood was boring for her because it was too professional. You had no exchanges,
right,
between the team and you, the director, and she wanted to feel a real adventure into cinema than something completely square.
Right. So does that mean that in French film, it's more indie, independent style of filming, or is it because we have a lot of indie films here and they're private people that are starring them, and then we have, you know, Cate Blanchett, of course, who very much walks the Hollywood red carpet system all the time. So we have a bit of a cross section, mm-hmm, don't we, here?
Yeah, definitely. I would say yes, the French cinema is an indie one. But you know, it comes from the new wave, La Nouvelle Vague,
yeah,
which had a great influence in this country.
Yeah.
Now,
okay.
We've got a message in saying, well, they love French film, and great that a culture embraces life with such intelligence. And also Catherine Deneuve is a smart lady. So I would definitely agree with all of that. But it brings up a good point with the cultural side, and that's obviously where you come in with Alliance, your organisation. So how much of the choice... which I know that you did not choose yourself, but how much of those choices are about almost selling France to Australian audiences and selling that culture?
Yeah, that is the point too, you know, and it's why the program is very balanced between, well, let's say popular movies and French movie style movies. So it's a mix. Program, this selection is a mix between popular movies. I wouldn't say conventional, because you have one of the most popular movie in France is a comedy, which is called Papa ou Maman. I don't know how this movie can work here, because it is so incorrect politically.
Oh, we would love it.
Well, yeah, we would
love it.
So incorrect that... Well, and it proved to be a success in France, a big one, a big hit.
And is that part of the festival?
And it's part of the festival.
Right, okay. Mm. Is there Is there films from other countries, French-speaking countries like Canada, for instance? Do they get screenings at a festival like this?
No, it's only French. But you know, the French production is very open. For example, the movie who represented France for the competition for foreign films in Hollywood was completely talked in Turkish and was filmed in Turkey, and the director made all her studies in France. She's Turkish. She lived in France. But when you see the movie, you say, "But it sounds weird because it seems that it is a Turkish movie, but it's French. That's it's a French production,
yeah. And the financed by French people."
There is really an openness to foreign independent filmmakers, and in the French production, you can produce film in foreign language.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have one in this selection, but it's a mix between French and Tamil, with the beautiful Dipan, who won the Golden Palm. It's about a family of refugees in France, and they speak most of the time their language, which is Tamil.
Right. Thank you so much for coming in, and welcome to Melbourne, even though you've been here for about 6 months now. And you work around the corner from where I live in St. Kilda, which is a wonderful part of the world. So, again, thank you, and come back again when you've got other events happening on the art world.
And now the festival has kicked off already.
Yes,
in Melbourne. But how can people find out more information? How long is it running for?
Oh, it's easy on the website, which is iffrenchfilmfestival.org. They can book online. They can access to all the information. And the festival will end the 24th of March. Mm-hmm. The sessions are in Palace Cinemas. You have six. Cinemas throughout Melbourne. Mm-hmm. So, well.
Which is great because, you know, you might be living in an area.
Exactly.
Where sometimes they're a little bit too centralized.
Yeah, true.
So
exactly.
You might be around the corner from you. You just got to check.
At the kino.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks to you.
Thank you, Michelle. You're on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan.
Joy 94.9.
My queen, Lana Del Rey, here on John 94.9. That was Dark Paradise.
You're obsessed, aren't you?
I am obsessed, David. You know that already. It is 26 minutes to 4. Where is the show gone? That was such a great, great and interesting chat with Mr.
Yeah,
Richard.
And we had a bit of reaction from it too with people.
We did, and we've got a few messages in, but great point made. Actors like Sophia Loren can cross over and become successful in Hollywood and in European film, and same as French film director Luc Besson did that as well. So it's really interesting when, you know, I think it's a great thing that you can share these cultural items with
Sophia Loren is Italian, of course, but she was also became quite powerful because of her husband, who was a director. I can't think of his name offhand. Do you know his name?
No.
And he was crossing over into American film, and then the Americans saw her and what a beauty she was. And she was just spectacular as a Hollywood actor.
Well, yeah, and I just think that the dialogue between countries sort of helps with that.
But it sounds like the French don't want that Hollywood experience from.
Well, I think it's a mixture. I'm sure there would be actresses and actors that would love that crossover.
Yes.
But I guess it's a different mentality, more of a craft potentially. Mm. Speaking of craft and art, but
still photography. This time. Oh, nice little segue
there. Thank you for coming in, Ross Spiro, into Joy 94.9 today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, let's start with your background. You are an artist, you're a photographer, but where did that love start? Can you pinpoint
back to my teenage years? I used to draw when I was a teenager. I used to draw actually African animals or the cats, and bought my first camera when I was 18, 19, something like that.
So you would have been a bit of a nerd buying a camera instead of the latest gadget on other points.
But there were no gadgets back, you know, when I was 18 years old. That's going back 30-something years ago, 35 years ago, actually.
Yeah.
But it was an unusual year for a teenager to buy a camera.
Right. And what did you start photographing back in that?
Nature? I am very much a nature-inspired photographer.
Right.
Just about all my photography has to do with nature.
Okay. And were you, did you train within the field? Or?
I actually went to school for about 6 months to learn photography, to become a photographer. But 6 months into the course, I decided that I couldn't afford it. I
right.
needed money more than, you know, anything else. So I got into cooking.
Right.
And I've been a chef since then.
Okay. Where are you a chef?
I'm everywhere at the moment. Right. I do casual, so okay. I go everywhere. But so. I mainly do aged care.
Right.
But a few years ago, I decided that it needs to be changed. So I went back to school. NMIT, what is now known as the Polytechnic College, and I finished the Diploma of Photo Imaging.
Was it intimidating to go back to something that you love so much? You know, were you scared that you wouldn't love it as much?
No, because it has always been there with me, mm-hmm. always. And the way that the school actually came about, I went to India about 12, 13 years ago, and because I still have my film camera. And so I just took it along. I went with a group of friends, not knowing that one of the friends that I was with already has done the course. Her partner was the director of the visual arts department of NMIT. So the whole thing just sort of fell into place.
Beautiful.
And not at all. I feel that, you know, once you are passionate about something, it never really goes away.
And I also find that the in an area like still photography, that the older you get, the sharper your eye can become.
Of course.
And you can actually see and I know that. And I'm only talking about using my phone as my camera. But I'm aware of, well, I did photography years ago, but I didn't really follow through with it. But now I have that eye and I understand where I should be standing and that I don't, how I've got to have the sun behind me in a lot of cases and just all of those, and I don't want shadows over things that I'm taking a photo of. And that eye has got sharper as I've got older.
I think that just comes with years and experience.
Yeah.
I mean, experience of, you know, just living life in general. You know, we all grow and we mature, and as you mature, you know, my own taste in music, you know, has changed over the years.
Yep.
You know, as has everything else. I still listen to my, you know, vinyl records.
Right, good on you.
From my 70s.
But the fact is that's good though, because it's hip.
Know.
Yeah. Now, what are you taking photos of now?
At the moment, the main two types that I do is long exposure photography. I use neutral density filters, which allow me to change everything, literally everything, the seascapes and, you know, buildings and so on. And I take photos of naked people.
Right. Okay.
But saying that, it's not just naked people.
It's not erotica or anything like that.
Not at all. Even though I do like erotica, but at the same time, I like the, you know, the human body.
The art form is beautiful.
Exactly. When you place it, you know, the way that I do art in nature, you know, as you saw, you know, in the lakes against, you know, dead trees or rocks and so on, it really just changes the human form altogether.
Absolutely. And what I love, because you were part of an exhibition last year at The Laird, which is called?
Last year, The Laird has the Men on Men exhibition every year in June.
And you won that?
I did.
Right. And the really wonderful thing is that it was a naked body laying in water, but you couldn't see the head, but it looked like landscape.
Yes, because it was from the knee to his sort of up to his shoulder blades as
well. Yep.
So you could just make up the actual shape of, you know, the contour of the body.
Yep.
And that was the idea of changing it from being a human body to something abstract, something that, you know, people stop and, you know, having to look at a closer look.
Yep.
Rather than just, oh, yeah, you know, that's a naked, you know, man.
Absolutely.
We're going to have more with Ross Spiro after some messages here on Joy 94.9. It's Sunday House Magazine.
Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine. David and Brendan with you. Taking you through to 5 p.m. when yesterday, once more, Our favourite Joy.
Oh, those youngsters, they'll get up to no good. I know they will.
Hope both of them are here today.
Yes.
Now, we are still chatting with Ross Spiro, photographer, artist.
Yes.
Very much an artist.
Mm.
Now, we were talking about last year's exhibition and him winning at the Laird. Now, Ross, tell us about, you know, what that does for you in terms of, you know, getting a little bit more exposure out there and making people aware of what you do.
For 30-something years, photography has been my hobby and it's been my passion, literally. And it still is and always will be. But there comes a time when, not just I, but every artist, you know, we want to share what we do with everybody else. And about 3 years ago or so, when I started, you know, wanting to get myself out there. But if you don't know how and you don't have, you know, contacts and so on, it's difficult. And entering the Man on Man exhibition at the Laird last year for the first time.
And winning it
for the, you know,
yeah.
Brett from the Laird actually, called me the next morning to say that I won. And I'm like, I had 30 seconds to go out the door because I had to go somewhere. And I'm like, you know, look, the excitement, the thrill of winning, but also, you know, what you said, you know, the exposure more than anything else,
yep.
You know, the contacts that I've made since. And I'm not just talking about models and so on, but other photographers that I'm actually collaborating at the moment, you know, on projects.
Okay.
You know, which is wonderful to, you know, connect with, you know, like-minded individuals.
Yeah. And so winning that, Men on Men, you then exhibited, this year, at the Laird, a solo exhibition.
And, what does one say about one solo exhibition? Amazing, really, really amazing. I had a hard time dealing with, you know, choosing images.
Yep.
You can imagine, you know, years and years of images, you know, which ones, but I chose to go with the latter rather than the earlier, you know, to show what I'm doing now than, you know, what I've done, you know, years and years ago. You know, to share the space, to actually have them there on display and to know that people would drop in.
And you sold some as well, which is awesome.
I sold my first prints 3 years ago. I'm not sure whether he's listening. Brad, you know, if you're listening, thank you very much. but it was wonderful, really nice feeling, actually.
Yep.
And because I spoke to the guy who bought the three of them.
Right, okay.
And it was just so nice to chat to him and for him to explain to me why he bought those particular images.
Right.
That, you know, they meant something.
Yep.
And for me, that was just really, really special, really special.
You're talking about collaboration before. You know, what directions is that pushing you in now? Like, how is that challenging how you take photos?
It's really interesting because when it comes to photography, I'm very much a loner. I like to go out on my own and do my thing, you know, and especially when I'm out in nature and I connect, you know, to the plant because I am a nature person. Being with other people is possibly a little bit of a challenge for me. But at the same time, it's wonderful. Like yesterday morning, I was with two friends down at Flinders, you know, pier, photographing the sunrise. And that was just wonderful. But then, you know, they came back to Melbourne and I stayed down there for the day and I just did my thing for the rest of the day. But more than anything, you know, to be with people who have done this for longer than I have.
To get ideas from them?
Ideas. Yep. And also at the same time, to be with people who have not done it for as long as I have.
Yep.
And for myself to be their mentor.
Sure.
You know, more than anything else.
Yep. And do you mostly work in black and white?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I have many, many. I like black and white. I like the contrast of black and white.
I love black and white, yeah.
But at the same time, I also love color images. I love, you know, I'm trying to bring up something in, you know, to show you. No, definitely. It just depends also on the subject.
Yes.
Really just depends on the subject. If I feel that something looks better in black and white, like, you know, seascapes, you know, especially long exposures, to me, they look much better in black and white.
Yep.
But when I do still life, you know, it is, you know, it stays in color.
Yep.
So it just depends.
Right. Now, How can we find out more about you? Do you have a website?
At the moment, I'm in the process of building a website, which is, you know...
What about a Facebook page?
I am on Facebook. If you Google my name, I am everywhere at the moment.
Right.
Literally page after page of Google. Because
fantastic.
It has to do with the, you know, exhibition at the Laird, the exposed
yes.
exhibition.
Yep.
So many, you know, websites out there that share the information on, you know, the exhibition.
Yeah.
And yeah, I Googled my own name 2 weeks ago and it was just like page after page.
That's wonderful.
It was amazing.
That's wonderful.
Really, really amazing.
It's just your name is your Facebook page.
I don't have a fan page on Facebook.
Yep.
But I'm on Facebook as a personal page. Exactly.
Right.
But I'm on many groups on Facebook, you know, photography groups.
Well, once you get to your Facebook, you'll find the others.
Exactly right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming in today. And it's always good to see somebody that is passionate about what they do and the fact that it's been with you most of your life and you're still loving doing what you're doing. Thanks, Ross.
Thank you for having me.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Turn away from the microphone.
You're on John 94.9.
Oh, did I get caught out?
You're a total professional, David. That was, I've forgotten her name, Paloma Faith now.
Oh,
you're on John 94.9.
She's wonderful.
And we are so jam-packed today. David's getting the preamble in already. We're going to welcome our next two guests. Now, very exciting because we covered this last year, didn't we, David?
Well, and I've covered it on a Saturday magazine. I've done stories. I've been following this now for probably 5 or 6 years on Joy.
It's such an amazing sort of initiative, and it really speaks volumes about the level of talent in Melbourne alone when it comes to art. But two people in particular, Prue Coburn and Tom Habal, welcome.
Thank you.
Very glad to have you here.
And also congratulations because you are two of the artists, which is Startup with Top Arts at NGV. And how do you get to become, Tom, how do you get to become part of Top Arts?
Well, starts off obviously like all the year 12s. If you're doing an art or studio arts subject, a folio subject in year 12, you can submit it into the exhibition. I think there's around about 2,500 applications.
Yeah, so again, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And then they obviously send you emails and talk to you about whether you're shortlisted and then selected, and then there's a big process of, you know, applying and getting your artwork to them.
Right.
Is it something that is spoken about, I'll ask you, Prue, is it something that is spoken about when you're studying about this program in particular? Like, are you working towards this well in advance?
Yeah, no, I think that it's more like whether your teacher is aware and interested and thinks that you're like you have the potential to enter into top arts before.
Right.
I wouldn't say that you aim to do it throughout the year because you're aiming to, you know, do the best you can in your folio and end of year exams and things like that. But then this is just like the cherry on top, I think.
Right. So does that sort of speak about the relationship you have with your teacher, you know, that they have that confidence in you and they know enough about your skills to sort of put you forward or ask you about it?
I definitely think it does. Your relationship with your teacher, especially in studio arts or, arts or studio arts is, a very big, thing to like get you through the year and, to help you push yourself through to Top Arts.
So both of you, but I'll ask you, Tom, when do you find out that you actually get chosen to exhibit?
Well, like the VCAA have their sort of their little headquarters down in Coburg, and you go and bring all your artwork down to them. That was about early December last year. And then you leave it with them, and then in about, end of January, you hear back, and if you're shortlisted, that's great. And then, obviously, I think that's probably about mid-Feb, you hear, if you're selected. And that's how it sort of went for both of us.
Okay, so it's only fairly recent that you found out about it.
Yeah.
Right. I thought it might have been at the end of last year, but it's that recent.
Yeah.
And how many other people are exhibiting, Peru, do you know?
There's 42, I think, 42, and then... But there's 47 entries or something.
Like right, that. Okay. And it's in a really lovely space down at NGV, the Potter Gallery, in Federation Square, underground. And it's off to one side, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's beyond, if you're wondering where it is, everyone, it's beyond the gift shop. So it virtually butts onto Flinders Street, doesn't it, there. Now, you didn't know each other until today when you came in. So at the launch, you would have both been there and probably bumped into each other and didn't know that you were both artists on, being represented in the exhibition. So what's it like for you, Prue, to be one of these artists?
I think it's really exciting because, yeah, it's just a great opportunity and to have, yeah, and all, being surrounded by all the other artists is quite interesting because they're obviously, you know, the next generation and it's all really exciting. Like, yeah, I didn't meet Tom because we all had to stand next to our own work and we were in totally different rooms.
Ah, that's right. I remember that. Yeah, because I didn't get to the opening this year.
We weren't just standing.
Now, as I described to Brendan, because he hasn't seen the exhibition yet, but yours is this gigantic stick suspended from the ceiling. I'm being rude to you here. With a rock in the middle of it.
That's exactly what it is.
But describe it to us.
Yeah, so it's about 10 metres long and it's two different branches that are, slotted into the middle of a rock, which is in the centre.
Which is, you've drilled a hole through the rock.
Yeah, so that there's actually a metal rod sticking through it slightly so it's safe to hang.
Right.
But, yeah, it was the whole, my whole folio was based on, nature and appreciating nature and then putting it in, a gallery so that you can appreciate it in particular and then maybe when you leave the gallery, you can appreciate nature in its own environment.
Right, but you're really taking it very much as an art form, aren't you?
Yeah.
There's bark on it and you actually take a bit of the bark away in stages, so very much as an art form, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. That's all about, appreciating the contrast as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Prue, we're going to ask you more about your work and also about Tom's as well after a few messages here on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Sunday Arts Magazine here on Joy 94.9. It's David and Brennan with you, and it's just about to hit 4 o'clock this Sunday afternoon. Now, we are talking to, and remember these names, because you'll probably hear a lot more of these, Prue Coburn and Tom Habal. Very careful to pronounce that correctly. Now, Prue, we were talking about your work that's showing at the exhibition at NGV Australia. So tell us a little bit more about the inspiration for it. You talked about how it sort of looks. What sort of went into it and how long did it take to conceptualise?
Yeah, well, obviously it took kind of all year, but the first half of the year is folio-based, so you're just kind of, initialising, thinking about what to do, looking at other artists, which is where all my inspiration came from, artists like Andy Goldsworthy or David Nash in particular. But then, in the second half of the year, that's when you start to, create your pieces, but you don't just create one piece, so it kind of, I'd probably say it took maybe, 5 weeks to complete this one.
Right, okay. And is it the biggest piece?
Yeah, definitely.
Right, because it is big.
It's,
And it's suspending from the ceiling as well. Yeah. So there is a lot of time and effort that goes into this exhibition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, your exhibit, I should say. Yeah. So, Tom, tell us about yours. Yours is so different to Prue, isn't it? So describe yours.
Yeah, well, mine is a series of three photographs.
Right.
And I've sort of played with the idea of distortion in my photographs of the human form.
And you've done it so well.
Yeah, thank you.
And is that all just done with, how do you do it? Because we had a photographer on before you.
Yeah.
Do you just overexpose do you leave it open? Or?
Well, I actually use a technique called the slit scan technique. So it's sort of, I use my digital camera and I also used an analog camera box, which I had to make myself. So I constructed this box, and it's a very lengthy process to explain, but I'll shorten it. It's pretty much, there's a 2 millimeter slit in a little panel that you slide across. And so when you expose, the photograph on my digital camera, I'm peering through this other little separate box, and it creates a displacement of movement.
Because you've done it at the beach, and it's two people.
Yeah, two people.
Two people.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Because of the distortion of it.
Yeah.
And they look as if they're in the nude.
Yeah.
But we'll go with that.
Yeah.
That they're in the nude. And you can't obviously really work out. Well, you can see legs and arms, but that's all you really can see. So it must have taken you a long time to get those three images.
Yeah. See, the thing about the technique I used, The distortion that it created meant it was individual to each photograph, and each photograph I took was completely different to the previous one I took. So in order to get something that I was happy with, I just pretty much had to keep going and trying different things, trying different movement, telling my model to, you know, try doing this sort of movement or a somersault, and I pretty much just had to keep going and trialing until I was sort of happy with
how many photos.
Well, I took about, on the day I would have taken about probably 200 photographs.
Yeah.
And then when I got home, I had to start that selection process where I'd, you know, shortlist the photos I wanted to. Yeah.
So you had envisioned it as a three-piece?
No, hadn't envisioned it as a three-piece. I actually wanted to do one big photograph, and it's sort of, there was a few different, and that's the thing about this sort of thing, this sort of process, you hit a lot of brick walls, you hit a lot of mistakes along the way. So I decided that I'd crop down each photograph and sort of focus on it as like a little sort of study, and that's where I decided I'd use a series of three.
All right, so now, Peru, tell us, because you're out of high school now and you're well and truly working towards a future, is it art that you're working towards?
Yeah, well, I'm actually going to art school and studying sculpture.
Sculpture?
So, yeah.
Yep.
So I think, yeah, that's probably where I'm looking at right now. I don't know what I'll look at in the future, but, yeah, right now I'm definitely looking towards art.
Because sculpture is a pretty tough, tough business, isn't it? Well, the arts, the visual arts are pretty tough, full stop. But it can be so exciting, and it can be, and there's more and more opportunities, isn't there, now, here, the sculpture park here in Victoria and so much else going on. So where do you see yourself going? Although you did hesitate and said you're doing sculpture now, but you don't know what will be next.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that I'll, you know, complete sculpture, because that's like such an interest to me. I'm not really sure where I'll end up, like, to be honest, just in the art world is pretty much wherever along there.
Well, working at the NGV, I don't know if you've met many of the amazing people, because we talk to them a lot, and they're all so knowledgeable, and they all know so much about art and so well travelled from working within in the field. And the director of NGV at present, Tony Elwood, started there and then went off to other galleries and now is back in Melbourne running a highly successful gallery. Tom, what about you?
Well, sort of similar to Prue, like I sort of just want to be in the creative arts, you know. It's something that both of us are passionate about. All of the people at Top Arts are passionate about it. So I'm heading to do communication design at Swinburne University, and I mean, I'm not really sure where it's going to take me, but as long as I'm in that sort of field, I'm quite happy and content.
So will you stick with photography, do you think?
Not too sure. I know that the course I'm doing, it sort of goes off on different pathways. So I might be doing photography, I might be doing web design. So it sort of all is relevant to what I enjoy doing.
Right. And what other stuff do you do, Prue, within your course? Because it just wouldn't be all sculpture. You have to you have to look at other things. So that's what learning's all about.
Yeah, so a lot of the lectures are actually just to, like, broaden your horizons in the world generally. And then there's also different classes, which is kind of, you know, different materials that you're not used to using,
so
you can learn other ways that you might find out you actually love and you know, want to follow through with that. So
okay.
And how much is like art history as well? Does that come into
there is quite a bit of art history, and you have to like study like specific paintings and do presentations and things like that. So,
and do you enjoy that aspect
as well? Definitely. I think I liked the theory for like studio arts in year 12, for example. Yeah, I actually really enjoyed learning about and contrasting, you know, modern and old
and having that understanding under your belt. Oh, because I don't know enough about art. I love art, and I just, you know, I see and like and whatever. But when you hear backstories of how and why is just fascinating. Yeah.
So is there a particular art, I'll ask you, Prue, first, particular art that you do just for fun? Is there stuff that you know that people, you know, you're not actually making it for an audience, you're making it more for yourself?
Yeah, well, I guess Yeah, I've always kind of sketched. Like, I originally thought I would probably do drawing or painting, but I ended up doing sculpture because I just thought it was so remarkable and fun to do.
Yeah, and hard. Yeah, you did a really hard one.
Pushed myself.
And Tom, sorry.
Yeah, no. Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, yeah, Tom, do you do things for fun as well? Like, you're into design?
Yeah,
well,
I mean, I guess both Prue and I have been sort of, like, so caught up in school, obviously, from year 7 to year 12, and that's sort of been our place where we've done our artwork. And I think sort of during this break from transition from year 12 to uni, I was almost sort of, like, arted out. Like, I was almost like, gosh, I need a break. I need to sort of, like, reset for uni. But, yeah, I mean, sort of similar to Prue. I like sketching, love taking photos. I mean, anything that I can sort of, you know, take photos of and, you know, draw. I mean, I just do it all the time.
Yeah. Because photography and what you were saying with the box that you were using your digital camera, you're really using, you're expanding a lot more than just what photography is all about, isn't it?
Yeah, and I sort of wanted to try and, in my photographs, because I was doing the human form, I was sort of discussing how our bodies are so structural from the outside, and really we're made up of a lot of water and a lot of liquid from the inside.
Right.
I sort of wanted to sort of expose that sort of hidden
nature. And which you did that in your explanation as well.
And that technique I used was almost hidden in a way as well. So I'll sort of bring both of those sort of ideas to light. Yeah.
And is it about sort of pushing both your own boundaries and also potentially the boundaries of the art industry in what you guys do?
Well, I mean, I think it's sort of just we're just doing what we love doing. And I think when we sort of discover a new thing, it's both to just broaden our own sort of knowledge of what art is, but also just to show other people that this sort of stuff can be done, and sort of just being able to share it with people is really nice thing to do.
And what you've both done is so now, in a way, taking us on another journey for next generations. So, again, congratulations, and come back when you're famous artist, and we'll talk to you about what you're doing.
Sure thing.
Thank you so much. And how can people get a little bit more information about what you're doing?
So you can just go on the website, and there's all information about everyone, or, of course, drop in.
Obviously come to Federation Square.
Yeah.
I think it's free entry, so come along and just check it out. It's on until July.
And that's the other good thing. It's on for a long time, isn't it? And the really lovely thing is that right at the front is all of you speaking about what you're doing as well, isn't there? There's a little it's a minute or less than a minute of each of you talking about why and how. And, wonderful experience for you. So thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Prue and Tom, for coming in to Joy 94.9.
Joy.
That is UK band Hertz with Stay here on Joy 94.9.
Love that band. Love them.
Wonderful, wonderful band. And you are listening to Sunday Arts Magazine. We're going to get straight into our next interview, shall we, David?
We shall.
We shall. We've got two more people.
Yep.
The studio's just exploding
today. We're turning them over.
So thank you so much, Julie Edwardson and Richard Woods, for coming in today and chatting with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Now, you're from, correct me if I'm wrong, EmotionWorks Cut Opera.
Yes.
Now,
that's right.
What is that? We normally talk with your background, and we will get into that in a minute, but just explain what that is first, and then we'll go into your background.
Okay, so this is a company I set up about 8 years ago. What we do, in essence, is cut down operas to around about 90 minutes, so the performances are, you know, shortened, like a movie, you know, highly edited film.
Right. And and do you, is it sung like an opera?
Yes. So it is the opera.
Okay.
And it's, so we're cutting out, to our words, because we are the larrikins of opera, is we cut out all the boring bits and just...
that'll go down well with all our opera buffs.
And, well, Richard's always more diplomatic than he says.
Some of the repetition is removed, perhaps.
and we cut in, so we cut out and then we cut in other music genres. So depending on the actual opera we're presenting, and this is traditional opera, we're not doing new work here, we're doing the well-loved classics, the Carmens, the Traviatas, the Bohems, and the stories that have withstood the test of time and are iconic.
And why do you think they do?
Because they're archetypal. Their stories...
Like Shakespeare?
Exactly. You know, the themes are about, you know, boy meets girl, she dies, you know, heartbreak and or, you know, betrayal, infidelity, you know.
Although
killing.
Carmen always gets me. It's about a bloody girl that works in a cigarette factory. You're like, come on, all that drama.
I know, she's...
The story is a little bit lame, the singing is, and the songs are incredible.
It is.
But, oh.
In our version, she's actually a drug dealing hooker nightclub singer performer.
That sounds better.
So it's just putting it into a contemporary context of the type of woman, you know, and, you know, she's an existentialist, Carmen, I think. You know, she's the first feminist, really. Lives in the moment, is a survivor, has been brought up without advantages, you know, and has learnt to survive and... Anyway.
So where did this... Because you're a singing teacher.
Yes, that's... Yep.
And so where did this idea come from? Why? So let's start from the beginning. Tell us a bit about yourself.
So once upon a time.
Flashback. Once upon a time in a far, far land.
All right. So cut opera for me is the culmination of really my career to date. I started singing as... I actually... Talking about art students, I was a fine art student at RMIT painting.
Ah, okay.
But training in singing.
Were you part of Top Arts?
No,
I'm giving you
wasn't.
A hard time.
I don't know if it was around then.
Probably wasn't.
So being at art school taught me to think outside the box, definitely challenge, look at things and say, okay, how could that be done differently? But, you know, I was training as a singer at the time and got interested in jazz and started a jazz band while I was at uni, you know, found, you know, connected with musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And gave painting up and focused on a music career.
Well, you see, the interesting thing, both the artists, the young artists we had in, both said that they're at art school in different arenas, but they don't know where it's going to lead them, and that's probably the adventure they've got there. Because a lot of times they say, "Oh, yes, I'm going to be an artist."
Yeah.
You know, they weren't saying that, were they, Brendan? They
I think a bit more realistic about.
I think an artist is a way of thinking. You know, it's how you think and perceive the world, and it's about living creatively. So whatever that means, you know, seeing something and say, okay. How could that be different? Or, you know, how can we change this?
Yep.
How can we take this another step further? Or, so going into jazz, I then started having classical lessons, because I wanted to extend my range and be able to do more things with my voice. And then that sort of took over. I developed this operatic voice. I ended up with Opera Australia, as a principal singer.
Okay.
So sang with them for, you know, 7 or 8 years and then decided to transition into directing. Again, for me, it was, I think, because of my visual background from the fine arts, the whole directing, the idea and the conceptual ideas of directing really appealed to me. I moved back to Melbourne and then I set up this company. When I was with Opera Australia and with you know, working as a singer and as a director, I'd always be in productions or on the desk or thinking, gee, wouldn't it be great if you had a jazz band on stage now playing that bit, you know, and, you know, then it would kick in over to the orchestra to play that bit.
Ah.
And, you know, so there was sort of, you know, I was getting ideas. As someone who goes or has had to go to the opera because that's my work and to look at opera, I would find by interval, I'd be like, okay, seen enough, heard enough, I'm ready to, you know, do something else now.
Been there, done that.
So for me, the art form of opera, which has been, you know, obviously centuries old, and that the mindset now, our sensibilities are so changed in the sense that we live in a technological age.
Yep.
Where everything we view is highly edited, video games, multi-communication devices, everything's moving really quickly and our brains are constantly, you know, shifting from one to the other. And I can't sit through an opera, you know. And so for me, the cut opera idea came out of a need for me to want to experience opera in a way that I felt was more entertaining. Because at the end of the day...
Idea.
Opera is entertainment.
Yes.
It's storytelling and it's engaging an audience.
Oh, and some of the music is just
Exactly.
Beautiful.
It's wonderful. Beautiful. And it is the epitome of the music. It brings in so many elements of the visual, the vocal, the music, the orchestration, often dance. Mm. It culminates in so many other ways. And the storytelling aspect of it. Yep. It's also drama.
Of course.
So,
Richard, what's your story?
Well, my background is as a blues musician, and I...
So what's it like singing opera?
Well, I, similar to Julie, I went to her for vocal lessons 10 years ago now, and she got me started on some opera, which was something that was very foreign to me. But it started to give me an understanding about how the voice actually works, which I had absolutely no idea of, and the actual mechanics of singing, mm-hmm. and really extending and, myself vocally.
Yeah,
because
that's often, with popular music, is often a problem, and it's reared its head in the last few years with Adele losing her voice.
Yes.
A similar person only a few years later, Sam Smith, both soul singers, extend their voices, and because they're not trained to know how to doing those vocal exercises, had to have operations.
Mm. I was just going to say, did you have to sort of almost start from scratch with your own voice?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I hadn't sort of developed any long-term bad habits, but blues is something that it's really driven by guitar players mainly, and the vocals is just a bit of an add-on.
Rich is proving that wrong now, aren't you? You're bringing this.
Well, I'm hoping to go sort of take it back and return it to its roots, which was vocal to start with. It was all sort of work songs and that sort of thing.
Now you've got a couple of events coming up.
Yes.
So tell us what they are.
All right. So we're doing our latest production, our new one, is Die Fledermaus, which is a Strauss operetta. Mm-hmm. The difference between an opera and an operetta is that operetta is comedy and has elements of dialogue in there, like in music theatre. So it's sort of like the olden day music theatre version, whereas opera is all completely sung.
Yep.
And so it is a comedy, Die Fledermaus. It's about infidelity and deception and revenge and all the good things stories.
Right,
about
and it. Then it's mixed with Cole Porter.
And we've mixed it all through. We've mixed Cole Porter songs throughout. So the idea of these cut in. So when I say I cut down, I also then cut in other genres, which relate to the productions I'm doing. So for example, with the Carmen, we've mixed in a whole lot of Latin and salsa music.
Sure.
So it has that sort of Latino, roots of Carmen. With this one, the Cole Porter, just really fits stylistically with the Strauss, and beautiful. The songs are very theatrical, the Cole Porter songs.
But what a writer he was. Oh, my
both
God.
Musically and lyrically.
Yeah.
Fantastic. He was so consummate in his writing. And he's one of those early music theatre writers that wrote on his own. He wrote the whole lot.
That's right.
Whereas a lot of them, Gershwin, and Rodgers Hammerstein, they all wrote in teams.
Yeah.
So he was really, amazing. So the way the songs work throughout the show is that it's carefully crafted. We cut it through, as the narrative's going, the songs reflect what's being said in the narrative. So it's like a commentary, and it heightens the emotional shifts throughout the story.
Okay. And then we'll talk about Richard's that he's doing after these messages. You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine.
Bringing a little joy to your life. Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Brendan Bale and David John Hunt here on Joy 94.9. Now, we've kept our two guests around. We're going to have a little bit of music a little bit later. But thank you, Julie Edwardson and Richard Woods, for sticking around. Now, we were talking about the new show, or a number of the new shows. So yes. tell us more about what's coming up.
So our first thing is Fledermaus next weekend, Saturday and Sunday. We've got two shows at Bennett's Lane Jazz Club. Mm-hmm. So our Fledermaus goes for 90 minutes. We've cut in all of the Cole Porter songs. We perform site-specifically or in music venues. Also, one of our missions is to present opera out of theatres, more in clubs or music venues. So it's more like a... casual experience like you would go and see a band or something.
Right. So you're sitting around a table having a drink.
Yeah, yep. It's more, you know, we're just wanting that accessibility and up close and personal.
Yep.
The cast consists of both opera singers, music theatre singers and contemporary singers, as you'll hear Richard singing in a minute, the blues phenomenal voice of Richard Woods. So Bennett's Lane, they're at 4:30 shows next Saturday and Sunday, the 19th and 20th. And then our next performance is we're doing Carmen at the Dalesford Town Hall.
Oh, okay, moving to the country.
Yeah, and our Carmen has a sort of lot of Latin and salsa and jazz and blues mixed in, so we showcase dancers in this.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that's on the 9th of April.
Whereabouts in Dalesford?
At the Town Hall.
Right.
Yeah, that'll be an evening show.
Oh, the whole town is stunning.
Yeah.
Well, this week, weekend, you know what's going on this weekend, don't you?
Busy weekend up there.
Yeah, chill out.
Could combine the two, just chop, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
You should have done it.
What's that? Well, our shows are very camp. You know, we have a bit of cross-dressing in there, and it's very...
See Richard in a dress.
he's been exempt from that yet, but the next one
idea.
He might be. But and then our next production in July is Traviata, which is mixed in with all the beautiful old jazz standards of the 30s and 40s, and that's at the Men's Gallery. So we're performing. Yes, it's a story of a sex worker. So again,
right.
It's a site specific.
Okay. Oh, fantastic.
Yes, and these performances will be out
But how do people feel about going to see a show there? Or is it exciting because then normally you wouldn't go there?
Yeah, we had a huge response. We did this 3 years ago.
Right.
And we did four performances, and we could have, you know, sold out triple that.
Yeah.
We got a huge dividing reaction, you know, some people saying, what the hell are you doing? And other people saying, wow, this is fantastic.
I think it's fantastic.
You know, and some people, you know, thought that were we supporting that industry? What we're doing out, where we perform is about, because they're cabaret in style, we don't have sets. So the environment is the set.
Right.
And the story is about a sex worker.
Yep.
So all we're doing is telling the story in a truthful context, you know, in a contemporary context, truthful contemporary context.
Yep.
So, so that's coming up in July.
Right, okay.
And
so let's talk about Carmen. Richard's part of it. And is he singing, is this blues, Richard, or is it opera that you're performing now?
Well, I perform the role of Escamillo. And in our version...
The Toreador.
The main guy.
In our version, he's known as Eskimo Joe, and he's a and he's a sort of a travelling blues man.
Bit of an old has-been,
a broken down.
Carmen, in this version of Carmen, she is a nightclub singer slash.
Right, okay, not a cigarettes factory worker.
No. So it's all set in a nightclub.
Okay, yep.
And you know, there's a little bit of dealing going on in the nightclub as well.
Right.
I mean, in the original story of Carmen, they smuggle goods across the border.
Yes.
So in our version...
They're dealing. Right.
And
he looks like a dealer too.
Thanks, David.
Hey, all I've done is pick on Richard since he's been in here.
Anyway, Richard does perform some blues bits throughout. He sings the Toreador song in a kind of really Tom Waits style rendition. It's fantastic, but because he's got that, we haven't got a keyboard here today. We've got the guitar, so we're going to sing
in our version, I do the Toreador traditional aria, not sung traditionally, and I actually fall off the chair at the end of it, and I spot Carmen. And then I come back with this little blues piece, which is called Sugar Mama. Well, I told her when I met her, I didn't have a lot of dough. She wrote out a check in a flash. I said, baby, I can count, but are you sure that's the right amount? She said, daddy, consider it cash. Yes, she's spoiling me, and it feels all right. None of my luxury,
now when I met her. Didn't have a lot of dough. She wrote out a check in a flash. I said, baby, I can count, but are you sure it's the right amount? She said, daddy, consider it cash. Not just a luxury. Oh, I feel all right. Not just a luxury, but the way you hug on me. Day and night, my sugar mama. My sugar mama. Yeah, my sugar mama.
Brilliant. Thank you, Richard. That was excellent. Really good. And I love the bit of sense of humour in the middle there. All right. So how do people find out more about you? It sounds incredible. I love what you're doing. It's just so exciting, so fresh, so now.
Yeah. Well, it is, you know, treating opera differently. And really what all we're on about is really to create good entertainment. Mm. And I think, you know, a comment Richard made just earlier was that there's only really good music and bad music. You know, there's a lot of elitism in opera and same in jazz too. You know, these two worlds of, you know, like classical musician versus the jazz musicians, and both relevant, all good styles. You know, there's only good and bad, and juxtaposing these, you know, different styles, I think just highlight the good parts of the music and makes it really good entertaining. They're fast moving, they're a bit irreverent, our shows, they're, you know,
fantastic. So email? Not email, sorry.
Website is www.emotionworks.com.au.
Now, that's all one word, isn't it? Emotionworks.
Emotionworks is one word. And the bookings for Bennett's Lane Fledermaus next weekend is www.bennettslane.com.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, the information's on their website as well. And yes. My contact's on the website, so anyone's free to email me and ask.
And you'll find all the other website addresses on there for to bookings for other shows.
Yep,
thank you for coming in, and thank you for doing something extraordinarily different and a lot of fun.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brendan.
No worries. And you are listening to Sunday Arts Magazine here on Joy.
Made in Melbourne for Australia and the world. Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine, and I'm just laughing at David again. Nothing new. but we're very, like, I'm actually really, really excited for this interview. Very interesting subject matter.
Yeah, because the backstory is going to be fascinating. They're doco makers, and all of a sudden, of course, there's a camera in the studio, and they're not filming us. They're filming Mickey Mouse.
That's Topolino, if I'm correct. welcome, Nick Bird and Eleanor Sharp, into Joy 94.9.
Now, you guys are doing something which is part of the Queer Film Festival. It's called A Remembering Holden the Man, which is a doco.
It's called Remembering the Man.
Remembering the Man.
Not Holding the Man.
Not Holding the Man. Remembering the Man. So we'll get to that a little bit later, but Eleanor, give us a bit of a story on who you are.
Well, I'm a queer filmmaker. I've been making films for about 20 years now, so it's been quite a while.
And would you be, if you're sticking to queer films, is that all you do?
Oh, no.
Oh.
But this film definitely is most definitely queer.
because it must be hard financially, is it? You know, like being a filmmaker?
Yeah, particularly documentaries. I mean, no one goes into documentaries to become rich, but documentaries seems to be where we've found our groove for the moment. I don't know what we'll do in the future, but at the moment we're into documentaries.
And you work with Nick?
I do work with Nick. Nick and I have been working together for a long time. Sadly, many people often mistake us as a married couple. I don't know why. We're like, no.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's, are you married? No, we're not.
So Nick, how did you meet up with each other?
Oh, well
that's a story.
at the Star Trek fan club. I was dressed as a Romulan. Eleanor was dressed as a butch lesbian pretty much today. And, although she had long hair and was a bit heavier, so I sort of looked like meatloaf.
Yeah, I was like a 24th century butch lesbian.
Right, yeah. Okay.
So, and... You know, I was a registered nurse and I got a grant from the health department to make some nursing videos. And so I sort of fell into filmmaking that way. And,
oh, right. So you didn't study it?
No, I studied at the AFTERS and the VCA.
Right.
So I've done lots of courses, have a big hex debt.
Right.
But it was great because studying just makes you think about film and constantly question your storytelling methods, and you go to film school and you just watch film after film and film. And in fact, Remembering the Man, the documentary we've just made, reflects something that I really loved at film school, which is the Brechtian method of storytelling. Mm. And we really wanted to break that fourth wall in Remembering. We really pushed our artistic boundaries. We weren't sure it was going to work, but we reckon it does, and we love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
And so did you also go to film school?
Yeah, Nick dragged me into filmmaking. It wasn't something that I thought. He's like, I've got a camera. Let's go and make some films.
Yeah, we had no idea what we were doing.
I was like, okay, yeah, I really had no idea what we were doing. And, yeah, I went to AFTERS later on. But pretty much we taught ourselves for a long time.
Right, okay.
Now, so I just want to ask, I'm so curious about this, because friendship and working together doesn't always work. So how were you, you know...
Well, maybe they're not friends.
Well, but, no, how were you able to sort of build that professional relationship while also being friends, and you know, you're still here making films together?
Yeah, well, we've had our moments. We really have. I call Nick the brother I never wanted. And yeah, we're kind of like family at this point. Like we scream at each other. And we really do.
Although remembering was really very satisfying. After Ballroom, which was another film we made where we had a lot of artistic and creative differences, whereas Remembering, we were just on the same page with our editor pretty much every day. There were very few arguments in the edit room, which is really lovely.
Lots of creative discussions.
So there was lots of creative discussions, but there was never a time where I felt Eleanor was wrong and hopefully the same.
So Remembering the Man is a doco on Holding the Man. But you were, as you were saying off air, that you started doing this soon after the book was out and the play was...
Well, we started towards right at the end of 2010. So, yeah, I mean, the book was published in 95, so, you know, quite a big gap.
Yep.
But, yeah, at the time we decided to make it, we had absolutely no idea there would be a feature film. And then a couple of months into our development, we discovered that they were trying to get a feature film up, and for a long time we didn't know whether they'd actually be able to get funding. So that was sort of ticking along in the background.
Right, okay.
But we just sort of concentrated on making a film.
What you were doing.
Yeah, and then we were quite excited when they did get greenlit, because we were like, this is great, you know, it's going to come out around the same time as our documentary, and there's going to be this, you know, it'll be great.
And
for
did
us,
you use the film as well as part of the doco?
Totally separate projects.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, very separate projects. And you know what? I'm really glad they're very separate after watching Holding the Man. I'm just so glad that, you know, Remembering
so,
the
so
Man
what's
separate.
The premise then of what you've done?
Well, the premise is to tell the story of Tim Conagrave and John Callio. So I wouldn't even say our documentary is based on Holding the Man. It's based on the lives of Tim Conagrave and John Callio.
Okay.
So we went in, we interviewed friends, we interviewed colleagues, and we also found, about halfway through our project, we found an oral history audio interview that had been conducted with Tim Conagrave a year before he died. And it's like a 3-hour audio tape of him talking. And it covers a lot of the same events that he wrote about in Holding the Man, but also a lot of things that never made it into Holding the Man.
Right.
So that became our primary source. It was the backbone of our documentary. So Tim almost narrates his own documentary. And then we sourced all the interviews around it.
And having it in that documentary form, did it give you a lot more freedom to include things that, you know, maybe mainstream audiences would not be able to take or process, maybe?
Well, I think so. I mean, we try never to overthink these things, going, oh, will it be appropriate for a mainstream audience? And we did have a couple of creative discussions about, you know, that and how far we could go. I think more in terms of the likability of Tim as a character, because it's a thing you have to have likable characters, or at least a character that people care about. Mm. So sometimes Tim was very, very blunt in that interview, and we're like, should we really put that in? You know, will we lose the audience if we put that in? Because in context of a 3-hour interview, it's fine, but when you're just using like a little snippet in the documentary, you could really end up not misrepresenting Tim, but not giving him sort of the broader context of
right. So, Nick, this is a tough question. If you don't want to answer, I get it. What's your feeling of the film? Because you've been working so closely with this whole project. What was it like when you actually then saw the film?
Oh, sorry, I think it's an abomination. And I think actually it's a wasted opportunity. And Tommy Murphy and Neil Armfield should be ashamed of themselves.
Oh, he does admit it. Eleanor, what's your feeling, or is he just being a bitch here?
Well, he can be pretty bitchy. Look, honestly, I haven't actually seen the film yet.
Oh.
No, I'm actually...
Have you done that on purpose?
It's not so much on purpose, but we've spent 5 years making this documentary, and I've actually almost reached burnout stage on the story. Mm. And for a couple of years, I was so looking forward to seeing the film, and then it finally got released, and I was just kind of going, I'm not actually sure if I can watch it now. So like, I've bought the DVD, it's on my bookcase at home, and I'm just like, it's weird.
Is that fairly normal, though? Because very amateur documentaries I did many, many years ago, but you sort of get to the end of the editing process and you think, I'm done with this story. I need to move on now that audience can deal with it. Do you feel that at all, or have you felt that in the past?
Pretty much every project we've done, by the time we get to the end of it, I never want to see it again. I'm like,
I mean, how many times have we watched the documentary?
We've sat through a couple of screenings now, and I'm going to think, can we just go to the pub and come back and Q&A at the end?
But so many people do that,
although
don't
it's
they?
A really interesting experience actually watching like the documentary with an audience. Because for so often, you know, we've watched it over and over and over and over again in the edit suite in bits and pieces.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see what people laugh at and what they don't laugh
absolutely.
At. And often it's totally different. We're
And that's confronting.
I never thought that was funny.
That's confronting because there were bits of the editing that our editor and everyone laughed at that when we showed it. And then in Adelaide, there was silence. And I'm thinking, oh, and in the Q&A, I'll say throwing because it felt like such a bad screening. And then we got the audience award at the Adelaide Film Festival and all these incredible reviews. So people were laughing on the inside.
Right, okay.
Do you think it's because of the subject matter?
Maybe.
It does quite get serious. They don't feel comfortable, you know, putting it out of their body. They kind of keep
although
it
inside. I laughed during the film a bit. Nick, obviously you didn't.
I did say the film is very watchable.
No, come on.
But seriously, look, I just think it's very watchable. But look, I've got high expectations of this, and it's an incredible opportunity.
Yep.
And look, it's a good film. It's taken $1 million at the box office. It's very, and look at all the reviews and everything.
Yep.
I just want it to be better. I want everything to be better. I want Remembering the Man to be better.
Do you think over time it will be a companion piece rather than a competing?
Oh, the film to our documentary is our companion piece.
Well,
yes. I know what you're saying.
I think they'll all become part of the bigger sort of holding the man picture.
The legacy.
You know, the book, the play, the feature, the documentary. Yeah, I think they all tell the story from a slightly different point of view and bring sort of, I think certainly our own sort of creative interpretations.
Timothy Congreve immortalised himself and his story in the memoir. People have a right, when he did that, people have a right to know the real Tim Congreve.
Sure.
You just can't base his life on what he says in that book and the film.
Can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Is this the first time you've actually made a doco on something that's already out there?
It's the first time we've made a documentary about a pre-existing story. All of our other documentaries have been sort of fly on the wall, follow kind of documentaries.
Give us some examples.
We did one called Ballroom Rules, which was following a group of same-sex dancers to the gay games.
Oh, fantastic. I remember that.
That was on the ABC.
Yeah.
And last year we did a documentary called Curtain Call, which was about an old couple who ran a children's pantomime theatre in Melbourne for 50 years.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
We followed them through the last year of their life in the theatre as the theatre was under threat of closing down. And
right.
Yeah, it was sort of looking back over their whole career.
Yeah. So how do you come up with the ideas, because they're two really exciting ones that you know that they're going to be interesting enough that people are going to go and see them, aren't they? Yeah. Where you were saying it's hard to get people to go and see docos and you don't make a lot of money. But you obviously would be doing the film festivals around the world. But they're subject matters that are interesting, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, documentaries come to us from different ways. Like the children's pantomime one was brought to us by someone else who's like, I've got this great idea, but I don't have the resources to make it. So can I join forces with you and we'll make it together? A young queer filmmaker called Justin Olstein, a shout out.
Of course.
Yeah, and the ballroom dancing documentary came because I was doing ballroom dancing.
Ah.
And Nick came along to see my first competition. I did a waltz.
We have to do this. And then some films just become too hot to touch, you know, the minute you do it, and then suddenly ABC comes on board, Screen Australia, Film Victoria. It's just was wonderful, and all these little boxes kept getting ticked for ballroom, but unfortunately that didn't happen for Remembering. In terms of funding. But
now, we've got much more to ask you. We're going to squeeze it in the last 5 minutes of the show, and you are listening to Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. It's Sunday Arts Magazine, David and Brendan with you. We've got a few minutes left. We've kept this lovely duo, Nick Bird and Eleanor Sharp, around in the studio from Remembering the Man.
Now, it's sold out.
It's sold out at Melbourne Queer Film Festival. Yeah, it's a centrepiece presentation showing in two cinemas simultaneously, and there's no tickets left, standby only.
How exciting is that? You must be pretty chuffed.
We're chuffed. It's great. We keep logging on to the website and going, yep, no tickets left. It's great.
Right.
Is there any chance of an extra screening, potentially?
Well, look, I know the Queer Film Festival does overflow screenings on the Monday and... Monday? Yeah, the Monday afterwards, so possibly. But we are showing at the Nova the week following in the Queer Film Festival.
So if you
haven't been able to get tickets for Queer Film Festival at Nova from the 14th of April, and we're doing a special screening on the 13th of April. Nick and I will be doing a Q&A.
Ah, fantastic.
So, all the details are on the Nova website. Right. So, go along and get it in there fast, because, you know, who knows how long it'll
hopefully it will go a long time. I was also going to ask you, are you doing a Q&A at the Queer Film Festival or not?
Are we doing a Q&A?
No, it's too hard because there's two separate cinemas. Technically,
at the same time. Yeah. Right.
But people can come and question us in the Acme bar.
Yeah, afterwards. We'll be hanging out in the bar afterwards. So come and find us.
You should. It's fun. It's great fun. But the Q&A, it will be worthwhile to go and see it in Nova.
Yeah.
And book for that, obviously. You have to book for that.
Oh, actually, and also at the Queer Film Festival on the Saturday following the screening, which is the 11th, I think. No, 9th. Saturday the 9th. Nick and I were doing a filmmaking masterclass. So, it's free to come along to, but you do need to book tickets because it's limited seating. So, and again, all the details are on the Queer Film Festival website, so you can come and ask us about the film in our Q&A there.
So what's next? Well, or is Mickey Mouse going to feature in...
I don't know if we're ever making another film after Remembering the Man, after this media interview. No, Eleanor has got a fetish, like every gay woman, for middle-aged men in lycra. Now, Eleanor, confess. Okay, you have Eleanor bears in lycra. You have.
I do have trouble looking away from
She does. So she's got a bit of a fetish for it. So I said,
Eleanor. Okay, I should explain that. Our next project is going to be a documentary about cyclists, specifically middle-aged men in lycra.
There's thousands of them.
Oh, they are.
And in every city.
Yeah.
Every city. It's just, and the weekend,
Is it going to be a warning?
They're road warriors.
So it's going to be sort of an ethnographic documentary, a look into the world of middle-aged men in lycra. So it's really about middle-aged men and, you know, the issues that, you know, guys face as they age. We'll use the cycling thing as a vehicle to it. And
they run in packs, don't they? It's really, and it's scary along that Bay Road. On a Saturday and Sunday morning.
Yeah, they'll hopefully run you over.
They literally have, yes.
Yeah.
Now, we're running out of time, but where can people get more information about your doco and about you guys?
Okay, well, we have a website, rememberingtheman.com.au. All the festival screenings are up there, and any future screenings. Hopefully we'll be doing TUG, which is Cinema On Demand. So we'll be doing some screenings around the country in cinemas. So, yeah, get onto our website. We also have a Facebook page.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.